Thank you, Bruce. And a warm welcome. If you're not feeling quite warm, if you peer through the window there, that is, if you weren't aware, the heating unit died big time, as in kaput. Gone burger. So, there is a portion already being put in the roof. If you notice, there's in the foyer, there's some big doors that had to be put in. So, Alistair, I digress big time here, but Alistair Eves, who's not here, he actually drove a forklift up the ramp inside, up and put it in there. So, amazing things are happening. And we've got that outside that does something, feeds up there, and then boom. So, we're not far off. So, if you're coming tonight, which I'm sure you will be, to the evening service, where Brad is actually carrying on in our series, because the next verses, a little bit after the ones I'm doing this morning, are on love, and that's our theme in the evening over this year, is love. Brad's speaking on that, the greatest commandment. So just dress accordingly and come along and be warm. But anyway, the nearer's in sight. We've been Sunday mornings, if you're not regularly with us, we've been working through Matthew. Just the book of Matthew, we've seen that God's Son has come down to earth, been born as a man, 100% man, 100% God, and has been walking around this earth. And Matthew, who observed many of the things and spoke to people, he wrote about it. So it's been like we've joined Jesus on his walk around this earth, and we've got to know some of the people that he met, some of the people that he came up against and interacted with, and we've observed how his followers have been growing and growing and growing. And the verses, so it's like we've been tagging along with Jesus as he's been walking around this earth. And the point we're up to now, if you were a follower of Jesus, your life was quite possibly in danger, whether you knew it or not. It was getting to be quite dangerous to be a follower of Jesus. Something that, I guess in our country, we don't experience quite to that extent. But whether they knew it or not, at this point in time, it was getting dodgy to be one of his followers. Because Jesus had, by this time, had a lot of powerful enemies that were formidable enemies too. They were quite powerful people. And they were just feeling increasingly threatened by him. And they wanted him out of the picture. Just black and white like that. They wanted to remove him from anywhere near them. And death wouldn't have been too bad in their eyes for Jesus. So in these days, just in the days just leading up to these verses, or maybe in the hours leading up to these verses, Jack, can you just, there are our verses. Maybe we've just got a wee breakage with our computer there, so we'll just leave it sitting on there, Jack. That's probably the best. So I'll put that down. So leading up to these verses here, we find quite an extraordinary meeting. I'm not sure whether it was days before or hours before, but there were two groups met together. And the extraordinary thing about this meeting, that these two groups of people who met together really hated each other. And that's not too strong a term. They hated each other as people and for what they stood for. But despite this, despite their differences, they still, it appears, got together. And one of these groups were the Herodians. Now, the Herodians, they supported King Herod, who had been appointed by the occupying force in the land, the Romans. So the Romans had appointed King Herod to kind of look after and run Judea, which was the Jewish land. So there was the Herodians. And then the other group of people who had met together, they were the Pharisees. Now, these were religious leaders, and they were a political force as well. And they strongly believed that Rome had no place in the land. This was their land. And it was blasphemous for them to appoint this King Herod, to run the place. And they fiercely wanted independence, you know, from Rome. So, the Herodians here, they hated the Pharisees because the Pharisees opposed Rome being in the land. And the Pharisees who were here, they hated the Herodians because they were pro-Rome and pro-Herod. Yet, it seems, they got together and sat down together. And there was something, it would never happen under MMP, but here they were, sitting down together, because they had one thing in common. And that was, they hated Jesus. I mean, it's a strong term, but it's a term that is quite apt. And they were unified that they wanted Jesus taken out of the picture. And if you were a follower of Jesus at that time, you know, you were involved in this as well. Now, the Herodians wanted Jesus taken out of the picture because he was a growing force in Judea. And he claimed to be a king. I mean, and that was in opposition to King Herod. And it was a threat to the stability of Judea, of that land. And if the environment there became unstable, then Rome wouldn't be happy and Herod would be kicked out. So they didn't want Jesus' popularity growing anymore. And the Pharisees, they wanted Jesus gone because he was a threat to them. He claimed to be God. And he was doing all these miraculous things that, well, kind of backed up what he was saying. And he was a real threat to their power and authority. So they wanted him gone as well. But on their own, they would have struggled to remove him. Because Jesus was very popular with the people. He was incredibly popular and had a growing fan base, I guess you would call it. But together, maybe they could settle on a plan that would take him out. So it seems there was this kind of get-together between these two groups of people. And it seems maybe facilitated or led by the Pharisees. But they sat down. And I'm not sure how long their discussions took. But they tossed around the ideas and they settled on a plan that would remove Jesus out of the picture, remove God's Son out of the picture. And to them it was foolproof. Some of the greatest minds had got together and discussed and come up with this plan. There would be no way out for Jesus. I mean, they had thought this through. Just in a short time, he'd be trapped by his own words and he'd be gone. So that's kind of where we are in Matthew 22 and verse 15. So let's read from verse 15. Then the Pharisees went out and laid plans to trap him in his own words. And that word trap, it's used elsewhere as a violent pursuit of prey. So do you get just the venom in what they were trying to do? a violent pursuit of prey. So they were on a mission, these guys. They're like stealth bombers, if you like, coming in and trying not to be detected of their plan, but they were going to trap him and violently, whatever that would be, he'd be gone. They were taking no prisoners. So then the Pharisees went out and laid plans to trap him in their own words. They sent the disciples to him along with the Herodians. So the Pharisees themselves, they weren't going to, they were, if you like, going to stay a bit in the background. They'd be recognisable. So they sent their disciples that may not be recognised by Jesus so much. And the Herodians, which were maybe a little lesser, lower profile, they would go and the Pharisees would stand back. They sent the disciples to him along with the Herodians. So here we go. And they found him and went up to him. And they said, "Teacher," they said, "we know that you are a man of integrity and that you teach the way of God accurately, and are indifferent to popular opinion and don't pander to your students. So tell us honestly." Somebody might know, in my 20s, I took a couple of years off work and went to a Bible school for a year in Auckland, and then went to work as a student / worker at a Christian camp, Totara Springs camp. And there were many highlights, but one of them was they ran a camp called Winter Bible School, which was, it was started off really for the dairy farmers who in the busy dairy season often struggled to get to church for some of them. So once the cows had dried off, the farmers had a little bit more time on their hands. So they ran this, I think it was 4 or 5 day winter Bible school. And there were a few kind of wealthy trusts around the Waikato, and they would bring out some, you'd say, world-leading Bible teachers to this camp, and they would teach, and some New Zealand Bible teachers as well. But these guys that came out were amazing guys. And in the evening, once most of the campers had gone to bed, the staff and these lecturers, these Bible teachers, would come and we'd jump in the swimming pool. Sound a bit odd at night, but Totara Springs had a big swimming pool, but it was a hot water bore. So, you know, it was cool. You sat in the swimming pool and you could just ask these guys questions. You know, anything that was kind of on your mind that you'd ever wondered that maybe you're waiting to ask in heaven, well, you gave it a go here. So you're real casual. You ask him a question. Oh yeah. And they'd give their views, and then maybe one of the other guys would pipe in and say, "Yeah, I agree with that," and you'd do follow-up questions. And these guys, you know, this is a good description of them. They were men of integrity. They taught the way of God accurately. They're indifferent to popular opinion. You know, they said what they thought the Bible was, regardless. They didn't pander to students. And it was a real cool time, just sitting in this pool, asking questions, and then, you know, there'd be follow-up questions. And this is kind of what these guys and their stealth mission were coming up to Jesus, posing as somebody who was genuinely wanting to know a question. You know, something that had been playing in their mind, and they were going to ask Jesus. But of course, as we've already seen, that wasn't their plan. That wasn't their real motive. They were there to trap Jesus. So they came up to Jesus, posing as genuine inquirers. And then here comes the question. Here comes what they thought was, if you like, their masterful stroke. Here comes the trap. They said, "So tell us honestly." And of course it was a bit of a rouge. "Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not? And they thought, aha, we've got them. This was their plan coming in. Because as they saw it, there were only two ways to answer this question. Yes or no. It was a black and white. Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar? And as they saw it, they hadn't. If he answered yes, just remember this was paying taxes which would eventually go to Rome. So just to fill in there. If Jesus answered yes, then he would be alienated. He would alienate himself from the Jewish people because they disliked the Romans immensely. Remember? They were occupying their land. It was their land. The Romans had no right to be in there. So if Jesus answered yes, then the Jewish people wouldn't be happy. Jesus would lose quite a bit of his following. And then the religious leaders could just come up with some charge, false charge, have Jesus arrested and get him out of the picture. And the people, you know, the people wouldn't really worry because Jesus had sided with the Romans. So if he answered yes, they'd have him. Just arrest him on trumped up, charge him, get him out of the picture. If he said no, you didn't have to pay taxes, then he'd be found guilty of treason against Rome. He'd be found guilty of inciting unrest, and the Romans would arrest him and take him out of the picture. So either way, Jesus could be taken out of the picture. He'd be gone. It would be the end for Jesus. So you can imagine them sort of quietly smirking inside as they've asked this question. There was no way out. But Jesus was God, and he saw straight through them and knew that they were not genuine inquirers at all. So verse 18, but Jesus, knowing their evil intent, said, "You hypocrites, why are you trying to trap me?" So you can see he uses that word trap. It's exactly, he knew exactly what they were on about. "Show me the coin used for paying the tax." And they brought him the denarii. And he asked them, "Whose image is this?" No, so he held the coin and there was a picture on there. "And whose inscription is it?" And there's a name on there. And they'd be thinking, oh, this isn't going well at this point with that answer. It wasn't a straight yes or no. And they'd be gulping. But maybe we don't quite get that full force of just what he's said. So let's just kind of just add a few sentences to it. Just to maybe gain what Jesus was getting at, if you like, the brilliance of what he was saying. So they brought him a coin. "Whose image is this?" You know, whose picture is it? It's Caesar's. "Whose inscription is on it?" Well, Caesar's. Let's add a few things to it. "Whose silver was used to make the coin?" Well, Caesar's. "Who paid for it to be minted?" Well, Caesar. "Who owns it?" Well, Caesar. And then they'd be thinking at that point, well, Jesus has got it. And Jesus could have said something like, well then, if he wants some of them back, then no problem. Give them back to him. Jesus had got out of them. These were Caesar's coins. And if he wanted some of them back, just simply give them back. So give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's. I mean, who could argue with that? And they stood there kind of dumbfounded and utterly amazed at Jesus' response. He's got it. And in verse 22, kind of shaking their heads, they left with their tails between their legs. Jesus was victorious. You know, after all, he was God and he had shown it. But these coins were Caesar's anyway, so if he wanted some of them back, then he could have them back. But kind of, if we just pause here, because while I was preparing, I had one of those Totra Springs kind of swimming pool experiences that I got through to this point and where the people left, but I had a follow-up question that I wanted kind of answered. And if these guys had been genuine, I wonder if they would have asked it as well. So let's kind of chuck out the Pharisees and the Herodians and replace them with genuine followers. And they asked the questions, should we, as followers of yours, pay taxes to Caesar? And he gives his answer, kind of skirting around the yes or no. Whose image is on the coins and whose name is on the coins? And the answer is Caesar. Okay, then give to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is his God. So he answered that, and it was a clever way of saying, yes, well, you have to pay taxes to them. But now, so I've understood that, right, I do have to pay taxes. But what belongs to God? Because he says, give to God what is God. I mean, that begs a question. I have to pay taxes, okay, give to Caesar what's to Caesar, and give to God what is God. But what belongs to God? What is it that I should be giving to God? And I looked around a bit, and I found another Bible teacher who I respect greatly. He had been pondering this, and he speculated what the answer might be. And it's a challenging one, and it involves more than just our finances, more than just our money. And his suggestion of what Jesus' reply to that question is, well, whose image is on you? Because we are made in God's image. And that's my challenge for kind of this week and beyond, to give my life back to him daily. You know, we're to pay our taxes, we're to pay our dues to the government, but we're also to give God what he requires, what he desires. And it's to give my life back to him daily. It's about becoming more and more like his son, being transformed into his likeness every day. To walk this earth in such a way that we increasingly reflect the qualities and characteristics and the human attributes of what Jesus showed. And that people will say, as we interact with them, isn't God good? Because we're reflecting God's characters. So let's indeed give to Caesar what is Caesar's. Let's be honourable and pay our taxes as they're due. But also, let's give to God what is God's. And that is indeed, I think, our life. Right. Thanks, Robin.
Does the music team come?